That was Jen Todd with Pride in the Name of Love. Good morning, Kansas City. That, of course, is a U2 song that Jen Todd covered, a song they wrote about the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Pride in the Name of Love. And we played that, of course, because it's 50 years ago today that Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King was assassinated in Memphis, Tennessee. And that's what we're devoting this morning's program to. My name is Mike Murphy, and we'll be playing music about Dr. King and hearing from people their reflections, what his life meant to them, and also what his death meant to them. And so all that's coming up. One of those folks is sitting here in the studio with me, Mr. Mike D'Amico. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, thanks for coming in this morning.
Thanks for having me.
So although we've known each other for a long time, you came to my attention for these purposes via Deborah Demeter. And she... Deborah is an African-American woman. You're a Caucasian male. And you were both going to Catholic schools in Kansas City.
Correct.
When Martin Luther King's assassination occurred. And so maybe you can tell us a little bit of, like, what came out of that? What particularly, how did those schools handle that? First of all, what school did you go to?
I went to St. Francis Xavier, a Catholic school at 51st and Troost.
Okay, sure. And, all right, first of all, do you remember hearing about the assassination? Do you remember hearing that in school or at home or on the news? Or?
Well, it was big news, certainly. The sisters came in to our class and told us what had happened. Was a seventh grader at the time at St. Francis, and little did we know at that time that that event would certainly, aside from the broader implications, would change my life and some of the students at both St. Francis, where I went, and Annunciation School, which was an inner-city school, all black at that time. St. Francis was lily white. So Alvin Brooks, among others, decided that perhaps we had the opportunity to do a little something about that. And so, along with several of the parents, volunteered their children to participate in an exchange program to try to see if we could make some steps forward towards understanding each other better, adding a little diversity to our lives, and maybe setting the stage for things to go better moving forward.
So this was a larger effort than two parishes, or was it just two parishes?
It was two parishes to begin.
Okay.
I think the hope was maybe it would spread.
It would catch on, yeah.
From my understanding, it was only a one-year experiment, but that experiment seems to have carried some long-term ramifications for the folks that were involved. We're still kind of digging into that to see what other responses, how it changed the lives of some of our other classmates.
So Martin Luther King obviously was assassinated in April. Today is the anniversary. So the school year was well underway at that point. So did this experiment take place the following school year?
It did.
Yeah.
I believe, of course, still just being one of the participants, we weren't privy to all the discussions going on above. The parents and I understand the diocese was involved, certainly the pastors from both parishes and parents. As the kids, while we were the quote-unquote volunteers, I don't think any of us really had any idea that we were volunteering for anything. It was, at least in my case, it was, hey, guess what? You're going to a different school next year.
Mm-hmm.
Which, at the time, you know, you claw your way from kindergarten up to eighth grade,
yeah.
Now you're at the top of the heap, and all of a sudden find out that you're going to a different school with a whole different set of kids. if I'd have probably had a choice, I would have probably opted out.
Yeah.
But choice was not really in my cards at the time.
So was this just eighth graders participating in this? Or
no, the way I remember it, and I might be wrong, but I think there were some sixth, seventh, and eighth graders that participated. There were only a few of us from St. Francis that came. I don't even know the number for sure. There were two of us in the eighth grade, Donnie Ritchie and myself. Donnie couldn't join us this morning, but he's part of this trek too. And we, Donnie and I, went to Annunciation. And then Deborah and several other students from Annunciation came to St. Francis.
Mm.
Again, I don't know the numbers either way. That's another part of our search as we try to remember and uncover all the details from that event in our life. But certainly going forward, I hope everyone had the same positive experience that I did.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it sounds like an interesting thing. We'll talk more about this throughout the morning. And we're at some point are going to be inviting people to call in with their reflections on Dr. King, or maybe their memories of what they were up to that day, where they were when they heard about the King assassination. But we're going to continue with some more music. You know, one of Dr. King's famous speeches. Quotes the old Negro spiritual, free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we're free at last. Here is the Blind Boys of Alabama's take on that old Negro spiritual. All right, that's you too with MLK from the album The Unforgettable Fire, and that album that also featured the song Pride in the Name of Love, cover of which we heard to begin the program this morning. Well, I did want to make one comment about that song, Pride in the Name of Love, because it is a great song, but there is one historical inaccuracy in it that they say that the assassination happened in the early morning, but it actually, I think, happened in the early evening. Today, 50 years ago today, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King was assassinated, and so we're commemorating King's life and death this morning. So before you two, we heard Charlie King and Karen Brandow doing Martin and the Crooked Man, about Martin Luther King appearing to George W. Bush in a dream. And then Pete Seeger and Friends, and those friends seemed rather young. And we heard Take It from Dr. King from Seeds, the songs of Pete Seeger. And we started out the set with the Blind Boys of Alabama and Free at Last. Well, again, my name is Mike Murphy. Mike D'Amico is joining me here in the studio. Mike was part of somewhat of a social experiment that took place in the wake of the King assassination, where there was a bit of a... you might call it voluntary busing, right? Where there was an exchange of students to be more deliberate about the integration process, I guess you could say, and then also, cement new bonds and take a step towards dissolving racism here in Kansas City. And so you were originally from the St. Francis, but then you went to Annunciation for this year.
That's correct.
Where is Annunciation?
I believe it's Linwood and Benton, I believe.
Okay.
Is the address. Coincidentally, that's also the grade school my father and aunt and uncle went to when they were children.
Really?
Many, many years ago. All are past now, but that was part of the tradition that Dad talked about, and how excited he was to kind of relive his childhood vicariously through this process.
Wow. Wow, that's interesting. So, yeah, so do you think that would maybe help sell the idea to him?
I'm not sure. I think that was just kind of icing on the cake.
Yeah, yeah.
Dad had been involved in the civil rights movement early on. And as a young kid, I guess that affected me somewhat because I remember going to some rallies as a kid, not really knowing what was going on, but happy to be there because Dad was there. And this is probably what set the stage for his enthusiasm for this project.
Yeah, well, that sounds fantastic. And so the first day of school, what was that like? Were you nervous? Were you... because, you know, any kid going to a new school for the first day is nervous.
I think terror is probably a good way to describe that. Of course, as an eighth grade boy, you have a certain, or you try to carry a certain demeanor about you, but all
right.
of that kind of stripped away, like you say, in a new school situation. And the dynamics were so different. I mean, again, I was probably a little better prepared because of Dad's involvement in civil rights and some of that rubbing off on me. But even with that, it was pretty terrifying to be at this new school as part of this new experiment that we had theoretically volunteered for, bless their hearts.
Well, interesting. So how were you received?
Tentative.
Yeah.
I would say would probably be a good description. I don't remember feeling any animosity. It was just that newness. Who are these new kids? They look very different. But it didn't really take that long. I mean, kids are kids. We found ways to play on the playground. Donnie and I were both ball players of, you know, some regard, so we could get out there and play a little basketball, a little touch football and stuff with the fellas. And so that made it a little easier for us to bridge that gap. But it took a while. I mean, there were other influences. There were kids from the neighborhood school, D.A. Holmes, down the street that were not that crazy about us being in their neighborhood and would voice those opinions from across the fence occasionally. So it took a while, but once we became kind of part of the group, part of the classmates, our classmates would defend us. They would make sure that we felt safe, that we were included, that we were part of the process. So that helped a lot. It really made all the difference. It wasn't long before we had formed some friendships that would last for many, many years going forward.
Wow. Yeah, so I'm anxious to hear more about this as the morning progresses, and we're also going to have Deborah come in, and Alvin Brooks will be joining us as well. So do stay tuned. We're commemorating the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King on today, the 50th anniversary of his assassination. One thing, and I don't think it's a coincidence that it seems to be cropping up that around the 50th anniversary, it seems like poor people's campaign kind of thing is back in vogue, and that's what Dr. King was involved in at the end of his life. We're going to play this little piece that put out by AP on Coretta Scott King and the Poor People's March, and we'll hear more music after this.
It was 5 years ago that my late husband, Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., stood in this very spot and told the nation about his dream.
A mass rally of 50,000 persons at the Lincoln Memorial on June the 19th was the high spot of the Poor People's March on Washington. Martin Luther King had intended to lead the campaign. That task fell to Dr. Ralph David Abernathy, his longtime friend and successor as head of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. As he dedicated the shantytown erected on the Mall between the Lincoln Memorial and Washington Monument, Abernathy had high hopes.
We will be here in Washington until the Congress of the United States and the leaders of the various departments of our government decide that they are going to do something about the plight of poor people in this country.
There was little enthusiasm and considerable apprehension in official Washington over the influx of thousands of newcomers into the small area. But a permit with a deadline was issued. The apprehension proved justified. Leaders were unable to police the camp, and thefts and assaults prompted many to leave. When violence erupted, police used tear gas to restore order. With the permit running out, Abernathy reached an accord with police, and he and some of his followers were arrested staging a march on Capitol Hill. Meanwhile, police armed with shotguns took possession of the shantytown. It was quickly demolished. Resurrection City, USA, was no more.
All right, Bob Dylan doing a Kris Kristofferson song called They Killed Him, comparing Martin Luther King, Mahatma Gandhi, and Jesus Christ from Knocked Out Loaded. Before that, it was Mike Milius with the Ballad of Martin Luther King, and New Riders of the Purple Sage doing Change in the Weather before that. And then before that, a little local flavor, Bobby Watson and the I Have a Dream Orchestra, the title track from Check Cashing Day, and that featured the powerful words of Mr. Glenn North. And I guess that brings us up to speed in what we've been hearing. It was 50 years ago today that the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King was assassinated, and so we're commemorating Dr. King's life and death this morning. And we have a couple of other guests joining us in the studio. So Mike D'Amico is still here, but we also have Deborah Demeter, did I pronounce your name right?
Yes.
And Alvin Brooks has honored us with his presence this morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Yeah, it is. So we appreciate both of you coming in. I know this is earlier than your comfort zone, I guess, but so we do appreciate it. But this is a special day, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
It is.
And so 50 years ago, Deborah, Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King was assassinated. Do you remember that?
Yes.
What do you remember about it?
Get up. Okay. First of all, that I was in school, and they say go home because people was upset.
Mm-hmm.
Then later on that night, we had a curfew. And my mother was upset because they started burning buildings.
Wow.
Yes. And I look out of one window, and I can see two fires at the same time in different spots.
Wow.
The electricity, wires outside was burning. It was sparking. And my mother got really upset and grabbed our coats because we was going to run out. But my dad came in and cooled us down because he wanted to eat. And he was a truck driver, so he was, and this was about 8 or 9 o'clock in the night.
Yeah. Wow.
So, Indiana have 31st to Linwood Boulevard or Indiana,
mm-hmm,
has never recovered from the riots.
Really? Yeah.
There are just, it was a dime store one time, and out post office, and a worker store. Only thing there is a fire station.
Wow.
And it was never built. It's vacant lots.
We're talking a half a century later.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow, Mr. Brooks, what do you remember about when you first heard about Dr. King?
Well, I'm a little older than Mike and Deborah, so they were seventh, eighth graders, and I had come back from on the 4th of April 1968, I got a call from the FBI agent who was in this area to monitor civil rights activities.
Hmm.
And I got a call from him before it came over the network.
Wow.
That, did you hear that Dr. Martin Luther King had been assassinated? And I said, no, you're kidding. And so then I happened to begin to come over to the networks. And, of course, things were in Kansas City were not really turbulent until the 9th of April. And that's when the school district decided that it would not close the schools. And there were three of us who were black, Dr. A. Lee Campbell and Dr. Robert Wheeler, who was assistant superintendent in charge of urban education. And I worked for Dr. Campbell. I left the police department in 64 and been with the school district. And so when my son and I went to Memphis to participate in the symbolic march and hear Mrs. King speak. When it came back, my wife said that Bob Wheeler called and said that Hazlitt has called a meeting. Hazlitt was the superintendent of the schools, had called a meeting for this evening. So I went. And there were about eight old white men there and the three of us. And we continued to tell them, don't open the school tomorrow. That was a question. That tomorrow would have been that Tuesday the 9th, because Kansas City, Kansas had announced that its students would be out. And our logic was that those kids would be in those various schools and better, quicker to be organized there than if they were at home.
Right.
We weren't listened to.
Right.
And so the morning of the 9th, I was in a memorial service over at Holy Trinity Episcopal Cathedral, and it was a capacity crowd, and someone walked up, said to the speaker, at least a lady, to hand him a note, and he asked, is Mr. Alvin Brooks in the congregation? I said, yes, you have an emergency call. So I go out, the lady took me to the phone, and I go out, and it was Bob. He said, oh, hell is broke loose out there. I don't know what you can do, but the kids have been gassed, tear gassed at 31st and Troost. And Vernon Thompson was arrested. That was a young activist at 31st in Indiana. And so I went out. When I got out, the kids were coming down Vine at 22nd Street and joined by Curtis McClinton and Otis Taylor, the Kansas City Chiefs, and Reverend Kenneth Ray, my homeboy, grew up with me. And so we marched with them. And then Bruce Watkins, who was a city councilman, one of the two black city councilmen at the time, we wanted to march downtown. Ike Davis was the mayor. Ilis Davis was the mayor, and he met at 17 Terrace and Paseo and started to march downtown, and the police said, you can't do it, Mr. Mayor. Whisked him away in a car, and the kids and the adults went westbound on the eastbound lane of I-70 and ended up at City Hall. So that City Hall, several folks spoke. I spoke as the last person, and I don't know how much you want me to go into this, but I don't want to. I know Mike has got some things, but I'm trying to get a history because they
were. Yeah, no, this is great.
They were babies at the time.
Let me just really tell our listeners really quick. You're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. Today is the 50th anniversary of the assassination of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, and we're speaking with Alvin Brooks, or Alvin Brooks is currently speaking to us about setting the stage for what it was like back then.
Yeah, and so at City Hall, there are a number of speakers, and I was the last speaker, and prior to that, Mr. J.D. Williams owned the Consolidated Cab, and he also had won the busing contract to bus the kids. Mr. J.D. Williams was an African-American businessman in the community. And so I saw the tents. It was over 1,000 kids there. By that time, the state patrol had come to reinforce the police. And the whole south side of the city hall was cordoned in by police. And so I saw one black kid be hit by a state trooper when he was trying to break through to get away. And, of course, he was hit and came back. by that, Mr. And I called Mr. Williams. I said, Mr. Williams, can we read this? It's going to be bedlam down here pretty soon. It's just awful tense. These kids are milling around. The police are here. And something's going to break loose. Well, the air personality of the black radio station, KPRS, had called Father Timothy Givens over at Holy Name Catholic Church at 23rd and Benton. And because every weekend they had Teen Town there. And so Father Givens said, well, I'll open the church. Mm-hmm. And said, send them over here. So when I talked to Mr. Williams, I said, listen, if you can get me about a half. He said, how many buses you want, Brooks? I said, Mr. Williams, about half a dozen. So he said, you know, I have to call my cab drivers in to bring the buses because they drove the buses. So the first bus that arrived began to load the kids. By that time, a bottle was thrown. Didn't hit anyone. And police began to throw tear gas. And at that time, one police officer I saw came up and threw tear gas in the bus that was just going east on 12th Street on the south side of the police station. So all of the bus was abandoned with the kids and everybody. They was coughing. Kids began to lay all out on the lawn on the south side of City Hall. Two priests, one black, one white, Father Warren of St. Augustine Episcopal Church there on Benton, both of them were beaten by police, and they were taken away. And after the buses began to leave, the kids were scattering everywhere. The buses never were able to get fully loaded.
Wow.
And Bruce Watkins, the city council person, and the mayor went over because Vernon Thompson had been arrested, and the kids were chanting they wanted Vernon Thompson released. So the mayor, Ike Davis, and Bruce Watkins, the city councilman, went over to talk to Chief Kelly, who was chief of police, to get Vernon out. When Watkins came back, he and I went out to Holy Name. The police had thrown tear gas in the basement of Holy Name Catholic Church, and kids were all out there in the street. And that evening is when you saw the burning. And as we had predicted, the kids from Kansas came over, joined with the kids from Missouri, and all up and down 31st Street in Prospect was burning. That evening, they set up a curfew. And then you couldn't buy gas in any place, anything except in your car. You couldn't get it in cans. And during that four-day riot, six black men were killed.
Wow.
Four at 30th and Prospect, independent of each other, except Mr. McKinney Sr. and his son, McKinney Jr., who was 15 years old, were in the Byron Hotel there in the 1300 block of Prospect. And they ran out, and the police killed them.
Wow.
Suge Martin, who was drunk on the retaining wall of a used car lot. He heard the shooting, began to run, and they killed him.
Wow.
Another gentleman who graduated with my wife, and his name escapes me now, was visiting an apartment building there on East 30th Street, just around the corner of 3rd and Prospect. He heard all the commotion. He opened the door, and a police officer killed him.
Wow.
Another man went through a barricade trying to get away, forgot to turn his lights on, car full of people, but they shot and killed the driver. The sixth black person was killed in 19th and Vine at Joe's Liquor. He was stealing some liquor, and police killed him, shot him in the back. So here you had some $80 million went up in smoke. Six black men were killed, and black-white relationships were shattered. And what happened with Mike and with Deborah, two priests from Annunciation, Father Victor Moser, and I don't remember the priest from St. Francis, decided, this is after the riot, that they would do something that school year in trying to exchange program. And that's how Deborah and Mike and my daughter Carrie and others got involved in that exchange program. And that's kind of a little long, drawn-out history, but that gives you the backdrop to why, what happened in the riot and how it affected the community. And white flight really took wings then. And because in early 1968, the city council in January had passed a city ordinance banning discrimination in housing, as well as lending institutions, and discriminate based on race or national origin. And a group of tavern owners had in 1964 public accommodations, when the city passed a public accommodations ordinance, the tavern owners had got enough signatures to put it on the ballot to be voted on. At that time, it was narrowly passed. But when you come up 4 years later with fair housing, which is a much more personal thing than public accommodations, that same group of tavern owners joined in with others, and when the city council passed the housing ordinance banning discrimination, they got enough signatures to put it on the ballot, and they call that a referendum. But then the riot then superseded the referendum, and the city council passed an emergency measure for the welfare and safety of the community, and that's what happened. But if it hadn't been for the riot, I'm convinced that the white community would not have passed a city ordinance banning discrimination in housing, because if you had narrowly passed it on public accommodation, housing was a personal thing, plus it changed the complexion of the school districts, and it was a whole new ballgame.
It sure sounds like it. We're listening to Alvin Brooks here, here on the 50th anniversary of the assassination of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. We're going to go play a little piece from the Pacifica Radio Archives that they did 10 years ago on the 40th anniversary. They did a whole series looking back on 1968 as a pivotal year. Here's another piece they did on Coretta Scott King.
There is something going on in the ether.
The kids are now moving back into the street.
For every Martin they cut down, there must be 100 Martins to step into his shoes.
1968, Revolution Rewind.
What you and I are for is freedom.
I hope you learned something from this.
April the 4th, 1968 was a defining moment in the United States with the assassination of the civil rights movement leader, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. 3 weeks later, on April the 27th, his then grieving widow, Coretta Scott King, delivered the following address in Central Park in New York City on the 27th Peace March.
My dear friends of peace and freedom, I come to New York today with the strong feeling that my dearly beloved husband, who was snatched suddenly from our midst slightly more than 3 weeks ago now, would have wanted me to be present today. I would like to share with you some notes taken from my husband's pockets upon his death. He carried many scraps of paper upon which he scribbled notes for his many speeches. Among these notes was one set which he never delivered. Perhaps they were his early thoughts for the message he was to give to you today. I am sure he would have developed and delivered them in his usual eloquent and inspired fashion. I simply read them to you as he recorded them. And I quote, Ten Commandments on Vietnam. Thou shalt not believe in a military victory. Number two, thou shalt not believe in a political victory. Number three, thou shalt not believe that they, the Vietnamese, love us. Number four, thou shalt not believe that the Saigon government has the support of the people. Number five, thou shalt not believe that the majority of the South Vietnamese look upon the Viet Cong as terrorists. Number six, thou shalt not believe the figures of killed enemies or killed Americans. Number seven, thou shalt not believe that the generals know best. Number eight, thou shalt not believe that the enemy's victory means communism. Number nine, thou shalt not believe that the world supports the United States. Number 10, thou shalt not kill.
Coretta Scott King, heard on Pacifica Radio on April the 27th, 1968.
This Revolution Rewind moment was made possible by the Pacifica Radio Archives with support from you, the Pacifica listener. To join the revolution, call us at 1-800-735-0230.
Welcome to the Million Color Revolution.
Opening address to the 1964 Berlin Jazz Festival, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. made the following statement.
Much of the power of our freedom movement in the United States has come from this music. It has strengthened us with its sweet rhythms when courage began to fail. It has calmed us with its rich harmonies when spirits were down. And now, jazz is exported to the world. For in the particular struggle of the Negro in America, there is something akin to the universal struggle of modern man. Everybody has the blues. Everybody longs for meaning. Everybody needs to love and be loved. Everybody needs to clap hands and be happy. Everybody longs for faith. In music, especially this broad category called jazz, there is a stepping stone towards all of these.
Another one from Bobby Watson and the I Have a Dream Project featuring Glenn North. That was MLK on jazz right here in your community radio station, 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Today, April 4th, is the 50th anniversary of the assassination of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Alvin Brooks has been painting a picture for us of what it was like back in 1968 here in Kansas City. And we've been talking with Mike D'Amico and Deborah Demeter about the exchange program they were involved in. And so, Deborah, we got Mike's perspective on this earlier. I'm just curious about, well, first of all, you know, Mike kind of implied air quotes around the term voluntary, yes. that he wasn't the one that took two steps forward. So I'm curious, what was your attitude towards this?
In the beginning, okay, I was witnessing the harm that was done towards people in the news, okay? So I really didn't like white people, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But I went there. I was shy and quiet, okay?
Get out of here.
Yeah. I went there, and I was really militant back then, so I called myself drawing a picture of Huey Newton,
mm-hmm.
and you know, and I had confrontations with this one kid named Buddy McDonald, and he didn't like me, okay, and he gave me okay, but anyway. As the program progressed, what was told that we had to invite a member of the opposite race over to our house.
Wow!
And this one girl, Kathy Court, she made friends with me, okay? And I invited her over to my house, and she invited me over to her house. And when I was at her house, I had the most wonderful dinner. I never had lasagna before.
Wow.
But that was the best lasagna I ever had in my life, okay?
Wow.
But when Kathy come back to my neighborhood, I do not know what we have for dinner, but we was walking down the street, and some kids start throwing cans at us.
Wow.
And shouted obscenities, but I didn't know what they are shouting. We just ran.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So, but it happened 4 years later that I married a man that was white, and he pointed out to me that all races of men was enslaved at one time. We was just the recent slaves, okay? And I was taught that I was burning two ends of the candle because I had white friends, but I was shouting black power. And I grew my hair like Angela Davis. In fact, I even got a chance to meet Angela Davis.
Wow.
When she was here in Kansas City doing a lecture at Pearson Hall.
Really?
Yes, at UMKC.
Wow.
Yes, I was running around with the assistant pastor of the church. Emmanuel Cleaver was the head of the church, and Steve Dewberry was the assistant manager. So we was having church meetings at night, reading the Red Book.
Wow.
Yes. And having, you know, people chase us, and it was, but then Don came along, and he straightened me out on, I've had five friends, and I didn't recognize them. And when I was watching lately the Hope and Fury documentary that was aired, I didn't recognize that white people was watching with us, okay? And they always was watching watching with us. I didn't recognize that they was marching with us.
Yes.
That is what my experience was.
Well, that's great.
Yes.
Thanks for sharing that. When we come back, I'm going to ask Deborah and Mike their impressions of, like, if there was noticeable difference in available facilities between the two schools. But we're going to hear this U2 song about the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. Here's a live version to Pride in the Name of Love from Rattle and Hum here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. It's the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and that's what we're spending the morning focusing on in words and music. Deborah Demeter, Mike D'Amico, and Alvin Brooks are all here in the studio sharing a little bit about what it was like in Kansas City back at that time. So, Deborah and Mike, you guys swapped schools. Did you notice any difference in, like, in the facilities themselves? Was there a difference in the predominantly white school versus the black in terms of equipment, that kind of thing?
Yes, I noticed that it was a lot different than the stool that I come from. Okay. In a way, because there was a the setup in the classroom was different, and St. Francis was a larger school, and it's still it's vacant, but they had a lot of windows, and we didn't have my school, Nazi Asian, didn't have a lot of windows, and the desk was different.
Yeah.
Okay. And the restrooms were different.
Wow.
Okay. Better than what I noticed at Annunciation.
What did you think, Mike?
Well,
go ahead.
Probably what I recognize the biggest difference is St. Francis had a bigger playground than Annunciation did. But other than that, I don't remember really any of that stuff registering
right
with me. It was
right.
The thing of it is, though, St. Francis was a newer school. And St. Francis, they used to call this it's the fish school because it was the way it was shaped. It was an architectural, it was written up all around. Annunciation was an old school, old building, the church, and then right across the alley or the driveway was the school. So it was a different vintage in terms of the age of that. So St. Francis was much later, and the shape, you know, was in the shape.
The church was shaped like a fish.
Yeah,
right. Yes. They call it the Holy Mackerel.
that's right.
That's great.
And then, of course, you had Rockhurst, you know, at that time, Rockhurst College right across, the Jesuit College right across the street, and then, of course, became a university later on. But it was different, you know, it was always that west and east of truce, and that exists today.
Yeah,
the Mason-Dixon line of Kansas City.
Right, yeah, exactly. I've got a question for you. Was Dr. King ever in Kansas City?
Yes, the Baptist Convention was here in the 60s. I don't remember the exact date, but I remember I was on the police. I think I was on the police department, but I wasn't on the detail to guard him. But he was here at the National Baptist Convention and was speaking there. So he was in Kansas City and very close to like the late Dr. John W. Williams and Dr. D.A. Holmes. Dr. Williams is at St. Stephen. Dr. Holmes is at Paseo Baptist Church. But yes, he was here in the 60s at the convention. I don't remember the year right off. But I think it had to be either before. See, I left the police department in 64, and I think it was probably 62 or 63.
I understand he had a relationship with John Swamley as well.
Yeah, John Swamley, the late John Swamley, was a great libertarian, humanitarian libertarian, and who passed just a few years ago also, and a pacifist. And there was a relationship, I understand, between Dr. King and John Swamley. And John Swamley was a professor out at St. Paul's School of Theology at one time, along with a number of other radicals that came out of that that group, and Gene Lowry and Tex Sample and Paul Jones were all radicals over at St. Paul's School of Theology. They were professors over there, but I was just with Paul and Gene over the Christmas holiday, and Tex Sample. So, but Swamley, of course, has passed, and he was older than the rest of us also.
All right, we're going to hear a message, and then Jim Hightower, and then we'll be back with more on this commemoration of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. Stay with us.
The Spring 2018 Band Auction is coming soon and is brought to you by Stockyards Brewing Company. It starts this Friday afternoon and will run until Friday night about 9 o'clock. And then Saturday at 8 a.m. will run until 1 o'clock. And then Sunday from 8 a.m. until about 5 o'clock. So tune in to KKFI and listen to the bands that you love and Have them come perform for you. Donate to KKFI, and they'll donate a two-hour show to you. All the information is laid out for you at kkfi.org/bandauction, the complete schedule of artists and how to bid. That's kkfi.org/bandauction.
The giants of food manufacturing are very concerned about you. They fear you could come down with a terrible plague called consumer confusion, and these selfless corporate entities are going all out to save you from it. The altruistic corporations say that this plague emanates from the grimy and untrustworthy grassroots. Indeed, several states intend to require food manufacturers that put genetically modified organisms in their products to include that information on their labels. Labeling advocates note that since millions of consumers don't want their families eating foods with altered DNA, putting the phrase, contains GMO ingredients, on the packages will let every shopper decide whether to buy that product or not. It seems both simple and honest. No way, shout lobbyists for the food adulterators. One, they claim that such efforts would create a patchwork of state labeling laws, inflicting confusion on consumers. Also, they say the labels might further spread confusion by implying that the genetically tampered ingredients are, well, tampered with by corporate engineers. So, the benevolent corporations are lobbying Congress to save you from confusion by autocratically preempting the state's authority to write consumer protection laws. Instead, the industry demands that a federal agency be directed to create a national labeling program that would take precedence over all state laws. Not that the national GMO label would be mandatory. No, no, it would be voluntary, so each corporation could decide for itself whether to tell consumers what's in their food. This is Jim Hightower saying, I was born at night, but it wasn't last night. No consumer is so confused as to believe that even a single GMO user would, quote, volunteer to be honest with us. Anything less than mandatory GMO labeling is nothing but flagrant consumer fraud. Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, hightowerlowdown.org.
And we're back on the air here. Deborah Demeter, Alvin Brooks, Mike D'Amico here in the studio. We're looking back 50 years ago today. Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King was assassinated, and we've been looking back on what Kansas City was like back then, and which I'm totally fascinated by this. So I appreciate all of you coming in this morning and sharing. We've been talking about this exchange program of students from a predominantly African-American Catholic school and a predominantly Caucasian Catholic school, and how that's worked out. So one question I have is, so you guys swapped schools, basically. So how do you even, you know, how do you even know each other? Like, you weren't never at the same school?
I selected Bishop Hogan to go to, and that is where I met up with Mike.
Okay.
And we went to Bishop Hogan together.
Oh, that makes sense.
But there was also some resistance on the part of white parents to allow their kids to come to Annunciation. I was a part of that whole scheme of things with our priest, and we were sitting in meetings, and so we had one meeting in St. Francis, one meeting in Annunciation. And so we had all these parents that were all gung-ho, both black and white, that we would have this exchange program. But then the white parents, many of them were saying, well, why don't we do this? Why don't we try bringing the black kids out of St. Francis first semester, and then the second semester we will see how, okay, if our kids come down here. That was a meeting at Annunciation. And so Carrie, who was in their age group and was sent out, we volunteered to go, like their parents.
Carrie, your daughter.
My daughter, yeah. Carrie. She made a statement at that meeting, and she said, Daddy, if they don't want to come down here, why do we have to go out there? And it got just as quiet. And I decided I'd let it resonate a while. I wasn't going to respond. Vic Moser, the priest, said, that's a good point. And, of course, the other priest, I don't know who you all's priest
Father
was.
Father Flaherty, maybe?
I think it was Flaherty. Yeah. And they said, that's a good point. Well, what happened, though, when it really came down to the exchange, see, this was being planned for that 68-69 school year.
Right.
And so this was probably about August. And July back in there, just planning for it. This was trying to do some healing after the riot. And but when it really came down to the exchange program, there were more black kids going to St. Francis than there were white kids coming to Annunciation.
Uh-huh.
And it ended up is only one in that class, only one white kid. Mike escaped. He escaped the wrath for a while. And Deborah, of course, she stayed. And I think, I don't remember how many black kids from Annunciation was in your class.
There was three of us. Around 30 or 40 white kids, okay?
Do you remember how many were in the class, who volunteered all together, and then ended up with three? How many black kids?
Three. No, altogether, 20 or maybe 20, close to 30.
Yeah, black kids. They were hoping that the whole class, the whole eighth grade class of black kids would go to St. Francis. Mm, black first. But
right.
There were some black parents who were resistant, because they were afraid.
Sure.
They were afraid of their kids, because particularly after some of those meetings, they were very confrontive meetings with white parents and not one, you know, why did this kind of thing. So, and in fact, they were a little distant. St. Francis, some of the parents were disturbed at the priest for even being a part of that conspiracy,
right?
to make that exchange.
Yeah.
But it was at the same time now. I remember that it was the aftermath of the riot, but it was at the same time that the Catholic Church in particular, the bishop at particularly had taken a stance on housing, fair housing. I'm backing up just back into a little before it was before the riot, and so the bishop had encouraged all priests to start a social action committee in their respective parishes to support fair housing. The priest at St. Catherine's decided that he wouldn't let the group meet in St. Catherine's, so he rented a storefront out of Red Bridge and Hickman Mills Drive to keep them from meeting in the church. Now this shows you how racism was.
Mm.
And then I remember speaking to what they formed was black-white teams to go out and speak for fair housing. And I don't remember the white person that was my team member, but I remember when we went to St. Peter's, the priest out there gave us more hell than the congregants did.
Wow.
He was a priest, and they told me who he was, so I won't call his name now. But anyway, it was interesting. But prior to that, and of course, Deborah nor Mike would remember this, and I came in afterwards, but there was a time at Annunciation, for example, that community was changing because of white flight.
Mm.
It was changing before the riot. When they built the freeway, I-70, they uprooted a number of black families.
Mm-hmm.
And unscrupulous, this was before the housing laws were passed, so unscrupulous realtors went in and started scaring white folks, knocking on the door and saying, "You see who's moving in."
Mm.
And in fact, sometimes they would move in a black family to frighten white families and then see who's moving in. Your property value is going to go down. And white folks began to put up for sale signs and accuse the black folks of being the ones that caused the property values to go down. And I never shall forget, there was a meeting at the white church at 28th and Prospect. And about 300 people there, was packed, and about 25 black families. And I was on the police department at the time, and they were just, the N-word was never used, but it was pretty close to it, because we were present, they kind of skirted around it. But you could tell when they get to a point, but they were saying, they're the ones that's calling our pride of values going. If they would stay with their kind, now we were in the church. So I decided I'd make statement. So I got, and they had a microphone sitting out there where you go up and make some comments. So I go up. Well, I'm on the air, so I can't tell you what my wife said when I got ready to get up and go up there. And she says, oh. And so I go up to the phone, and I said, you know what? I always thought that white folks were bright. I said, but you're the dumbest people that I know. And I didn't say, I just let that resonate a while, and it got just as quiet. That was my cameo performance. And so I said, let me tell you what. I said, how many of you had Econ 101? And three or four people raised their hand. I said, okay. I said, what happens if, those of you who've had Econ 101, what happens if the market is flooded with cars or houses or whatever? What happens to the cost? And they said, well, the cost goes down. I said, oh, okay. I said, what happens if there's a scarcity, just a few, where the price goes up? I said, okay. I said, can I see the hands of any of you in here where a black person has come up and knocked on your door and asked you to sell them their house? No hands went up. I said, how many of you had a black person walk up with a gun and said, listen, I want your house. I'm going to give you what I want to give you for it, and you got to move. Nobody raised hands. I said, oh, okay. I said, how many had a white realtor to come to your house and knock on the door and said, you better sell because you see who's moving in. Everybody, I said, oh, I said, now who's responsible for the cost of the price of your house going down?
Right.
So I said, okay. I said, you're dumb, but you've learned something today. So I took the whole congregation. We walked out of the church.
That's great.
Mike, I would like to tell everyone that the reason why that I got Mike and Evan Brooks together is because I noticed the divisiveness of this country when Trump got into office. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Who is it? We don't call you 45? The 45th president.
Okay, yes. Because I remember that we got along 50 years ago, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like he's taking us back. Mm-hmm. And
he's making America great again.
Yes. Yeah. And President Obama says when Mike Brown got shot, mm-hmm. okay, that we should have a dialogue about racism, but this is not the place. And I said, but I look at us getting together 50 years ago, okay, and I decided to tell the story, okay. But I needed Mr. Brooks as an adult to share with us the start of the process. Because me and Mike, we didn't have anything to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
We was volunteered, okay?
Right.
Yes, we was selected.
They were our guinea pigs.
Yes.
And my daughter will never forgive me for that either.
And my parents look at it as white people. Also, the education, they figured that I would get a better education going to the all-white school.
I got you.
That is their motivation for sending me to that school, okay, that white school. So,
right.
But this is how we got together, Mike and Mr. Brooks, to form this story to promote socialization around the races.
That's great.
And bridging the gap between black and white. And that is a dream that Nick Hanks and I want to promote. I didn't tell you all, but KCPT is interested in promoting socialization because we was made to socialize with each other and have dinner over to our... And remember what King says, when all the I have a dream that when the slave owners and the slaves can sit down together at a table.
Right.
Okay, that is the dream. And we did it 50 years ago.
That's really powerful. We just got a minute left because I've got a really long Nina Simone song I want to close the program with. So I just want to take this time to thank you guys for being here this morning. And
it's this ungodly hour at 6 a.m.
Right, that's right. Right. It's very much appreciated, and I appreciate the work you guys are doing to help make our community a better place. 50 years ago and still here in an entirely different millennium.
Yeah.
So I want to thank you all for coming in. And
there is a
march for Dr. King taking place on Friday afternoon. I think it starts at 34th and Troost is what I saw, and heading over to towards Prospect.
Plus tonight at the Pearson Hall at UMKC, there is a panel discussion on the riot, the pre and post 1968 riot in Kansas City, and it's open to the public.
Thank you. All right.
It begins at 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock tonight.
We're going to hear from Nina Simone, a song she performed just days after King's assassination, after these messages.
Support for KKFI by the Wyandotte County Ethnic Festival, presenting music, dance, and educational fun on Saturday, April 14th from 11 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. in the Kansas City, Kansas Community College Athletic Field at 7250 State Avenue. There will be dance groups, live music, and cuisine from around the world, including Peru, West Africa, and Mexico, as well as the Children's Corner. No tickets are required. More information is available at freewebs.com/WYCO Ethnic Festival.